Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This sermon is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
We are beginning a 5-week journey through the book of Hebrews, which is sort of one of the longer and weirder letters in the New Testament. It's this amazingly rich book that has all of this material in it about how Jesus connects us to God. And it begins this morning with this conversation about angels. Angels are God's divine messengers. And so you saw the background on the screen is this lovely sort of pair of statues. One of them's at a weird angle, I think, because they're on the ceiling. Of these two wonderful little angels, sort of in the way that we picture them, like human beings with wings coming out, and they're all quiet and serene and peaceful. So I thought you might want to see what angels really look like, according to the Bible. According to the Bible, angels are these strange, terrifying creatures. This is one way of rendering a cherub angel. When I say cherub, you might think of the little baby with the diaper and the wings flying around shooting people with happy love arrows. That's not a cherub. This is a cherub. A cherub is a terrifying composite beast with four faces and a bunch of wings and legs standing straight up. And this is actually less scary than the seraphs, which are flying fire snakes. So when you hear the Bible talk about angels, you should be frightened, because angels are weird, strange, terrifying beasts. And they're weird, strange, terrifying creatures because they are helping us recognize the way that God is different from what we picture God to be. Whatever it is we picture God to be, God is different from that. And angels are so weird and strange and terrifying because they are a way of helping us recognize that when we are in God's presence, something strange and different is about to happen. So when we hear about angels, be frightened, not comforted. That may not have come out quite as hopeful as you wanted it to.
Our scripture reading is from the New Testament, Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, and chapter 2, verses 5 through 9, found beginning on page 264 of the New Testament in your pew Bibles. Please read along with me. Long ago, God spoke to our ancestors in many and various ways by the prophets, but in these last days, he has spoken to us by a Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom he also created the worlds. He is the reflection of God's glory and the exact imprint of God's very being, and he sustains all things by his powerful word. When he had made purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high, having become as much superior to angels as the name he has inherited is more excellent than theirs. Now God did not subject the coming world, about which we are speaking, to angels, but someone has testified somewhere, "What are human beings that you are mindful of them, or mortals that you care for them? We have made them for a little while lower than the angels, and you have crowned them with glory and honor, subjecting all things under their feet. Now in subjecting all things to them, God left nothing outside their control. As it is, we do not yet see everything in subjection to them, but we do see Jesus, who for a little while was made lower than the angels, now crowned with glory and honor because of the suffering of death, so that by the grace of God, he might taste death for everyone. The word of the Lord.
I have shown you pictures of my pets before. A few weeks ago, I showed you a picture of the very best dog ever who is no longer with us. And previously, I had showed you a picture of our dog and our cat, our dog Allie and our cat Rhea. So I need to update you so that you know who I'm talking about. We have a new dog and the old dog. So you can see in the picture on the screens, the one over on your left there is Allie. She's been with us for some time. And right next to her is Alistair, who just came home Tuesday evening. And so here they are. They had just met each other just minutes before this picture was taken. And you can see that, you know, they're walking along. What you can't see, because this is not a moving picture, but if you know dogs, you can actually probably already tell what I'm going to say. What you're watching is Alistair cutting Allie off. So she's just walking along the fence there, and Alistair's just like, boom, move himself right in front there. This has been a past several days now of the dogs sort of working each other out, figuring out not so much where they stand relative to each other, but how they're going to relate given where they stand relative to each other. Because like I said, if you know dogs, you can tell from this picture where they stand relative to each other. Who's the higher status dog in this picture? That would be Alistair. And this is fine with Allie, right? Because dogs are these naturally, comfortably hierarchical creatures. Dogs function by knowing where they stand in the hierarchy of the pack. Now, our pack consists of two dogs and some humans and a cat. The cat is still not entirely sure where she fits in the whole hierarchy of things because cats aren't hierarchical. Although Allie defers to the cat as well. I think I've made fun of her on that count here before. And Alistair is the one who is in charge of the animal kingdom in our house, and he's a very good dog. He's learning very quickly just where he stands relative to the people in the house, which is below us, and that's important. He needs to know that. And he's very comfortable knowing that. That's an important part of this whole situation here. Humans are not hierarchical in this way. Humans are hierarchical, but we are anxiously hierarchical. If you put a human in charge, they will start to worry about who's going to come and usurp their authority. Dogs have to work it out, and once it's worked out, it's fine. Humans, when we are in charge of something, when we are higher in status than someone else, that someone else becomes somehow weirdly this threat to us. We experience status right along with the fear of losing that status. And our fear of losing that status plays out in the way that higher status people tend to protect their status at the expense of those who are lower in status than they are. That's among the various names we can put on sin, that need to protect our status at the expense of those who are lower status than we are. And so it's no wonder if we're going to experience and practice our status as oppressing those who are lower in status than we are, then it's no wonder that we would fear losing that status, because we picture hierarchy as violence, where dogs picture hierarchy as just knowing where you are. Okay, we can move back to the angels now. It's been a really rough, not even 24 hours to be a preacher. It's been a really rough week in general, but it's been a really rough 23 and a half hours, I'm sorry, 22 and a half hours, to be a preacher, as we are working with the reports coming from the Walmart in El Paso, Texas, as investigators are understanding what went into the mass shooting there. There was another mass shooting in the early hours of this morning in Dayton, Ohio. Don't forget the one in Gilroy, California, earlier in the week. I'm actually not going to talk about those other two. I may conceivably not even be talking about the one in El Paso. What's on my mind right now actually is a manifesto that was posted online just minutes before the attack in El Paso. Investigators right now are working on sorting out for sure whether that was posted by the individual who carried out the mass shooting at the Walmart. And I need to talk about that manifesto because of what it contained. It contained a raft of anti-immigrant fears. It contained a raft of white supremacist talking points. And those anti-immigrant fears and those white supremacist talking points cooked into that manifesto are built on status anxiety. They're built on the fear of being overrun by and oppressed by some other who comes into our space. Our space being this white, racially constructed space, and the other, in this case, in the words of this manifesto, being Hispanic immigrants coming from south of the United States. Again, the police are doing their jobs right now investigating the actual connection between that manifesto and the shooting and killing of at least 20 people at the Walmart in El Paso, Texas yesterday. But I fully expect that they will find the roots of that attack in the white supremacist ideology of that manifesto. The way that white supremacy issues in the deaths of human beings, that's why we have to name white supremacy as sin. And I have to confess the same sin is present in me. The same sin is present in me whenever I picture power as a zero-sum game. Whenever I think about my status and act upon my status in the world out of fear that I will lose that status, a status that I never fully earned in the first place, a status that I simply have inherited as a piece of who I am in the place and time in which I live. When I carry my status as if it is fragile and threatened by the presence of others who have different kinds and amounts of status than I do in any given situation. When I use my status to stand myself up and lord myself over others, I participate in that same sin. The book of Hebrews testifies to a coming world where that is not so. The book of Hebrews testifies to a coming world where this is not the way things are. Testifies to a coming world where humans can live at peace in God's presence, without fear of death, without fear of loss. And we see signs of that coming world. The book of Hebrews tells us we see signs of that coming world in the life of Jesus Christ, in God who is present with us, God present with us as our faithful high priest, the one who opens our way to God. That's all present in the book of Hebrews that we will spend the next few weeks with. And the book of Hebrews opens with this meditation that we read together on the mystery of Jesus' low status in the world. Now, we know that by rights, Jesus is at the very top of the hierarchy of all hierarchies, right? Jesus, the one who is the begotten Son of the Creator of the universe, the one in whom all things hold together, Jesus belongs at the very top of whatever hierarchy there may be. And yet we know the story of Jesus is a story of Jesus being temporarily at least demoted down below the angels. Now, the angels in the ancient understanding are also hierarchical creatures. They stand in ranks below God, and then humans stand in rank below them, and Jesus was demoted down to that human level of the hierarchy, and even the lowest level of the human hierarchy, that one that we so anxiously hold on to. And Jesus lowered himself to that place in that hierarchy, not just to work out some complicated transaction about sin. Jesus lowered himself to that place as a way of illustrating how God's reality works. Jesus lowered himself to the lowest place humans could be in order to lift up the lowly and heal human brokenness. We used words like subjection as we read this together. Jesus' subjection to human sin and brokenness shows us what status is really for. Specifically, it shows us that status is given to us so that we might give it away for the sake of those who are lower in status than we are. Status is meant in the way that dogs use status. Status is meant to ensure that everyone gets what they need. Most of us in this room have inherited a similarly comfortably high status to the one that I know that I wear through this world. And so this language from the book of Hebrews speaks to us in a very particular way. I think this language from Hebrews calls us to let our hearts be changed once again, calls us to be willing to subject our status to the needs of those that we wouldn't otherwise listen to. To subject our status to the needs of those whose presence in our lives challenges and even upsets the way that we so comfortably go through the world. This language calls for us to have the courage to use our status for healing, not as we define healing, but as those who are wounded by the present system of power and injustice call for healing. Calls us to use our status for healing as those who are wounded call for it. And it calls for us to submit ourselves once again to Jesus' work in our lives. Because the good news is that letting go of the status that we have so comfortably inherited, that is actually Jesus' work in our lives. That is actually what the coming world Hebrews talks about looks like. Jesus called it the kingdom of heaven. Hebrews will call it this coming world. We'll call it a reality where we are already in God's presence. And this is all, it's not about fear. It's not about loss. It's about letting go. Letting go of what we otherwise hold so tightly to and welcoming the one who comes to disrupt and change and transform the world in which we live. And Jesus walks with us into this world of peace and of grace. So may we receive the faith to walk with him. Would you pray with me? Lord God.
And now, a moment for mission.
So, good morning. My name is Greg Dehigh. I'm on staff at Meals from the Heartland. On behalf of all of us down there and the families and children that we feed across Iowa, the U.S., and the world, thank you for selecting us for your Coins for Concern this month of August. How many of you have packaged with us before? All right, so a good number of you. So you kind of know our mission. Our mission is to empower others to feed the starving. We don't want to just get a bunch of machines and make meals that we can send out to kids. We want the community to come in and have that time together to make meals and have that sense of accomplishment when they're down there for 2 hours packaging meals. So it's really a great project or a great mission that was started about 12 years ago, and we're just thankful you guys have participated. We are now making two meals. We have our normal rice meal, hearty pack, which you guys have probably packed. And starting this year, we started making Taco Mac, which is a taco flavored mac and cheese. To date, we've made 2 million of those meals. And the pantries in Iowa and around the U.S. absolutely love them. Kids like it because our mac and cheese had soy in it, which makes it look kind of weird for kids because they're used to Kraft macaroni and cheese, which is just pasta and cheese. So this actually has a taco flavoring added to it, which makes the soy then look like hamburger, which makes everything okay, I guess. So the kids love it. It's really going off really, really, really well for us, and we're getting lots of great feedback, so it's very exciting. So now about 15% of our meals are given to feed kids here in the U.S. So that's a big jump from where we were. The 85% still go to feed around 200,000 kids a week. Is what we're helping feed. So I'd like to show a quick video if I could, and you'll get an idea of who's getting these meals.
Hunger, a daily struggle for millions of children. Children who, like many of our children, follow a familiar morning ritual. Traveling to a place where they will learn, where they will play, and where they just might get their one and only meal of the day. But thanks to you, we can make a difference. And one step can go a long way. For every box of Hy-Vee cereal you purchase, you help us feed a hungry child. One box of Hy-Vee One Step cereal provides one meal that can make all the difference in the world.
Thank you.
So there's a couple of things I really love about that video. Even though it's Hy-Vee that did it for us, those are actual kids that are in our feeding program in South Africa. So you can see how healthy they are, how excited they are to come to school to get something to eat. And it's really neat to see them just enjoying our meals. You get a really good snapshot of what it's like down there. Secondly, obviously Hy-Vee is a very big supporter of ours. So when this month of coins is over, feel free to buy cereal at Hy-Vee. That's their brand. You are still feeding kids if you're a cereal lover. So I thank you very much. Lastly, we have a little event coming up in a couple of weeks down at Hy-Vee Hall. It's an event where we need 10,000 volunteers to come down and package meals with us over 4 days, August 28th through the 31st. If any of you would like to come down and join the party, we hope to package 4 million meals in those 4 days. So I'm going to leave behind some flyers in the back or out in the lobby that you can take. It's our website. You can go and sign up your family, your neighborhood friends, your Bible study group, whoever you would like to come down and join us and help feed the starving. So thank you very much and have a blessed Sunday.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.